your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome to the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Sunday night, September 7th, 2025, as we record this podcast. And how about those red-hot White Sox? They win another series on the road, this time in Detroit, after another coming-from-behind victory. The White Sox have won seven of their last eight games and are 23-24 since the All-Star break. Does this increase in success since mid-July change the rebuild timeline? We'll discuss that and preview the upcoming Tampa Bay Rays series, which is the Curtis Meade Revenge Series, and take a look around Major League Baseball. Joining me are Sox Machine's beat reporter James Fegan and managing editor Jim Margulis. And Jim and James, gents, the White Sox have this road trip to Minneapolis and Detroit. All season long, they are playing poorly against their division foes, and they go 6-1 on this road trip. It takes Tarik Skubal to beat this White Sox team. Jim, what do you make of this run of the White Sox winning seven of their last eight games?
It's nice. It's nice to write about success and growth and margins for error and not feeling like everything is so fraught. Like they get shut down by Tarik Skubal, which sure, you know, he's probably going to win the Cy Young, and they didn't strike out a ton. They put, you know, a lot of routine outs, but just it looked like a Tarik Skubal start, and then they shrug it off and then they do more of the same. And I think what I'm seeing is with Carroll, with Teal, with Montgomery coming aboard and figuring it out, just what the White Sox had missed for so many years without having left-handed bats, scattered throughout the lineup, not being able to keep ordinary righties honest and letting just any kind of righty with a decent slider have a field day against them. It'd been a long time since the White Sox have been able to have that kind of balanced lineup and be able to sit guys strategically and you know, not have to run Benintendi in the outfield, but then also be able to DH him when need be and him deliver. So that's, to me, my biggest takeaway is they're able to score runs, you know, five, six, seven runs a game with some regularity just because they, you know, opposing teams just can't throw a decent righty. And if that righty somehow doesn't deliver, just line them up with righty relievers. And those guys can get the job done in an inning at a time. Like, it requires more thought handling this White Sox offense now that they have balance and that it's not so much a matter of, like, right, right, right.
Yeah, we've been clamoring for this for a long time. Every time that there's an offseason plan project, load up on left-handed hitters, please. And the White Sox have finally done that. And as you mentioned, Jim, it's paying off for them. James Fegan, what do you make of the White Sox winning seven of their last eight?
Very strange. Don't know what to make of it. To the point about left-handed hitters, I think I would only add, like, capable, competent. Like, they don't have to be great left-handed hitters. But I think the White Sox previous efforts have involved, like, guys like where that's their only merit or there's some sort of resuscitation project involved, like in getting Nomar Mazara to actually balance out the lineup, or AJ Reed, or anything. Like,
there's at least a
good floor that they've established with the level of lefty talent they have, even if there's not, like, beyond, you know, Colson being on an 80 homer pace, necessarily this established, like, star producer, you know, even though Tauchman's been pretty well up there all year at this point. So, yeah, the offense sticks out. Like, I think what stuck out Sunday is, like, they didn't play very well, or at least they at multiple junctures made the sort of mistake that would, like, take you out of consideration of them having hope of winning that day, probably through 2022. Like, a two-run error that looks really, like, grisly and looks like the Alex Rios play, like you talked about in the recap, and, like, two separate pickoffs and just generally not able to escape some jams they needed to or convert as well as they needed to, but, like, just the consistency of opportunities to, or the consistent poor matchups they forced the other side into, kind of stood out. Like they kind of had a margin for error, even like they clearly weren't like the more talented group. I would assume on the field on Sunday, they seem like they're able to kind of regularly create problems, opportunities rather than like, oh God, I hope the dice roll in the way where Luis Robert's up during the one scoring opportunity. And so, yeah, that's just saying a fancy way of saying the hitting's better overall, but you see it.
Well, and also on Friday too, like they had the two run, well, not error, but the collision between Shane Smith and Kyle Teal. Like previous years, that would have been the Connor Gillespie, Gordon Beckham collision, where it's just emblematic of everything that's wrong with the way the White Sox raise players, the way they deploy them, the way just bad luck strikes at every moment. And this was a case where, like, yeah, it was embarrassing, but more in terms of like, God, I hope one of these promising rookies isn't lost for the season. Like, it was more, the concern was more, yeah, is it going to set back individual development? Is this a case where, somebody's year ends on a sour note? And like, no, they stay in the game. And then also they won the game. They managed to stick through it. So yeah, just improving their margin for error and not having, one mistake just doom their day, and also not having their season defined by the one mistake that dooms their day, I think is a nice little target to set for next year as they go into understanding what exactly this offense can do.
Yeah, and that's a nice segue into our next topic
You're
of what to
welcome.
make. Thank you, Jim. Of what to make of this run by the White Sox, because it's more than just winning seven of their last eight games. Since mid-July, since the All-Star break, the Chicago White Sox are 23 and 24. That's the same record as the Detroit Tigers. When you look at the American League Central post All-Star break, Kansas City has been really good. They're 26 and 20 since the break. Cleveland's 26 and 21. As I mentioned, Detroit and Chicago 23 and 24, and the Minnesota Twins are 16 and 31, and that doesn't look like it's going to get any better for the Twins before the end of the season. Realistically, the Chicago White Sox can avoid 100 losses this year. They have a real shot of increasing their win total from 2024 by 20 plus games. That's a gigantic jump, no matter where you are in Major League Baseball from one year to the next. So, James, you said that this was strange of the White Sox winning seven of their last eight games. With this level of play picking up for the White Sox post All-Star break, does this impact the rebuild timeline? Could Chris Getz and the White Sox front office decide to be bolder this offseason, push more chips in the middle, and decide, you know what? We realistically could contend in the American League Central in 2026.
Response to that would be, how bad did you think they were going to be, and for how long? Like, I think playing second half or second since the All-Star break, playing like 500 baseball, I guess that reasonably should offers the idea that you should try to play 500 next season, or have that at least be a stretch goal. But realistically, going from like a 100 loss team to a 500 team is a pretty big leap to do in one season. It sooner be like, can they get up to being like, the same level of maybe incremental improvement of, 75 or 77 wins, or generally look more capable of playing over 500 or better ball going forward. Like, that's a more reasonable timeline. I could see them, like, I don't really see them spending like they're going to win the division. I think that, that can be a great goal for like the roster be talking about in spring, and certainly what the coaching staff preaches. But I don't think you're signing free agents on the basis like, well, this is our first contention year, and then he'll be on hand for he'll be on the back half of in of this deal in 2027, 2028. Like, those are probably, I think 2026 is still more like a bridge year, ideally, to get towards like where you can really map that out. So I think like how much more aggressive they'd be. One, it depends like what budget they get, where it's like if they're just expected to be around the same level because their attendance was awful again, then yeah, they're probably going to search for a lot of upside opportunities and be pretty prudent. Otherwise, like them getting aggressive looks like, trading Edgar Caro or something, like moving around like the young players to get better, or make some sort of like shift over and like positional need that I don't necessarily think people are hankering for them to do. Because like, do you really need to shape your next postseason roster and make those sort of choices at this juncture? I don't think so. So I think it you can get probably a little bit more high budget, especially just because you've cleared off so payroll in your 1 year starter that you sign and hope to turn into an asset. Or I think you should be able to get back in the market of like signing a couple relievers to major league contracts. So you expect to work in leverage of some kind and not just all be like waiver claims and minor league deals level of investments. But I think as far as like spend like a contender, and that comes with like the moves you make, usually you're trying to have maximum impact right away. That's kind of how those win now players take shape. I don't know if that's like, I don't know if they're really ready for that yet. And also like Curtis Meade, Miguel Vargas, Lenin Sosa are out of options. Like to some degree, they need to kind of like figure out like who in that mix they want to keep or really preserve and who's just kind of like serving a role as a good depth, but they would move out of the way for, you know, a long-term solution. So I think there's a lot of like questions to be answered a little bit well, and I don't know if they want to, certainly with Curtis Meade, answer that question this offseason already and say we've made a decision and going forward. So I think they're a little still in between, you know, what this week makes them look like.
Jim, what do you make of the rebuild timeline with the White Sox being 23 and 24 since the All-Star break?
I think if it were a situation like 2019 where Bryce Harper or Manny Machado fell into their laps at a price that is lower than everybody thought in their primes, you could make a really good case for acquiring that player. Like, we don't need him to be great the first year. We don't need everything to fall into place to make use of those, that first season. But by year two, there should be a contender here for the division or a wild card spot. And then you keep building and generating excitement from there. Like,
Is Kyle
failing,
Tucker that level of player, or is he too old?
I don't know if he's like that. Yeah, based on him being kind of banged up, the way he's playing right now, it's like he's, I would say he's kind of there. I just think like the market's gonna be inflated for him because he's like the one guy. I'm talking about more like the price. I don't see Tucker coming down for the price. I mean, could maybe. Who knows? Maybe he does because of just how weird the season's going to be with the lockout looming after the year, that maybe some prices get depressed. But assuming that doesn't happen and the big players sit out, which is why, Harper and Machado went for lower than everybody thought. There wasn't that bidding war because like the big guns were more or less resetting CBA figures or trying to shed massive investments that they just made. And so like the Phillies and Padres could like wait for the prices to come down to sign them. Like, were it that kind of situation, like I would be pushing for the White Sox to sign like Kyle Tucker, for that price lower than we thought. Like, oh, that's actually pretty reasonable for a superstar. And the way like Machado and Harper have played, like they've borne that out. That would have been a very good investment for the White Sox. So I don't know if I see that situation arising to where like you could make that case. So yeah, like James said, there's just a lot of guys to filter through still. The outfield is still, we've talked about it before, like Luis Robert, are they truly committed to him? Is he going to be their $20 million addition? If so, like being successful on the scale that they'd want to be successful to, push for a postseason spot would be like rest heavily on him. And I don't know if you want to do that. So yeah, I think they're more or less trying to set themselves up for lightning strikes, maybe be like a cool, interesting team. But I think that, it might take a new CBA for them to really understand what they're playing with, what kind of resources they have and like what makes, and push those resources towards a team where they have a lot of their positions and rotation spots figured out.
With the money issue that the White Sox are currently battling, because what was it? See, just sends viewerships down 50% for the White Sox. It's much worse for the Blackhawks and not as bad for the Bulls, but we've already seen one TV personality casualty with CHSN struggling right now on the revenue side, with Jason Goff not returning to the network and being the Chicago Bulls pregame, postgame host. And as James mentioned, attendance is still not great. The way I look at it is for the American League Central, the Detroit Tigers have a Tarek Skubal issue going to next year. And Skubal is going to make a lot of money. A lot of money when he's a free agent. And he's a free agent after the 2026 season. We had Cody Stavenhagen of The Athletic join us for the preseason preview of the Detroit Tigers. If the Tigers were not good this first half, there were already assumptions that Skubal would have been out on the market this midseason. But the Tigers, of course, are on pace to win the division. They're going to keep Skubal, probably keep Skubal through 26. But if the Tigers are not good in the first half, we're going to be talking about Tarik Skubal getting traded before the deadline because the Ilitch sons don't have the same appetite their father had when it comes to spending money on players. So that's one thing to pay attention to the American League Central next year. Obviously, there's the Bobby Witt issue for all the teams dealing with Kansas City. I don't know what to make from Cleveland year in, year out. And Minnesota has a very talented farm system, but with what they did at the trade deadline, they have so much work to do that even going to the next season, you can probably project the White Sox to be ahead of the Minnesota Twins when it comes to the American League Central. I don't think the White Sox are to like break the bank and go crazy this offseason and signing big free agents. I'm not stopping them. Not stopping them. I want to make that clear. Go ahead. Sign Framber Valdez and Kyle Tucker. Make this team more interesting. Because there's a part of me, Jim and James, it's like Jerry Reinsdorf wants one more shot. Dude, you're 90 in February. Okay? Like, how many chances are you going to get? So if you truly want to have one more road to glory, one last dance, this would probably be the offseason. But I don't think he's going to do that. But I think that there are some areas of the team that the White Sox can be more aggressive in. I'm looking at the first base market in free agency. I think someone, the White Sox would surprise, I think, a lot of people, but Josh Naylor could help out at first base for the Chicago White Sox. James mentioned relievers. Not saying go sign two former closers and try to duplicate the Kendall Graveman and Joe Kelly strategy, but maybe that's an area where the White Sox spend some cash. I think that it's worthwhile, instead of just trying to sign guys that are interesting to fill out the roster, that you can truly make upgrades this offseason, that if this offense is for real, and the White Sox have scored five or more runs in 24 of these 47 games, so they're scoring five or more runs 51% of the time since the All-Star break, it has been consistent with this level of offensive production. If this is real, and you make these certain upgrades, I think they're more likely to surprise in 2026 than slide back into another repeat of 2024 or another 90 plus loss season that we could ultimately see in 2025, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. And they are closer to building a team. Like, I think we've seen last two winters, just more a matter of let's collect some interesting talent we might be able to flip because we have so much playing time to give. And we have rotation spots 3 through 5 or infield spots, you know, first through third, completely unsettled. And we just need even a lefty or a righty, even a short side of platoon we need. And yeah, the outfield is still going to be wide open, but otherwise with the out of options guys, with the number of starters who are doing okay. Yeah. I think that improves if Jonathan Cannon comes back, but still like they're showing an ability to at least fill out rotation spots to where their rotation is never like a true emergency. Or if it is, they're doing a very good job of hiding it and keeping a pretty straight face, that they can be more strategic and just wait for a market to shake out and say like, if somebody is just not finding the deal they want, if they are the, like, you know, Pete Alonso or something like that, like just having a hard time finding the right deal, just, why not make a splash at one position for 1 year, with a player option or something like that, just to make it interesting. And, perhaps, we've seen with the Athletic polls and ESPN polls that the White Sox always grade poorly in terms of their reputation around the league. But if nothing else, I think it's like a way to test just whether more players and agents and everything like that take it a little bit more seriously in terms of what they're trying to do. Like, it doesn't hurt to ask. It doesn't hurt to be rejected, especially if it is a very weird market to where so many teams are not trying to sign players for more than 1 year. Maybe the White Sox can find at least one position to where like there is a 1 year deal for a credible major league option / borderline all-star, or at least, somebody who can't be ruled out for it, that would fit a need and maybe upgrade lineup rather seriously.
And the first base is not like an overwhelming market, Jim. We've talked about this in recent years. It's like you can get a quality first baseman on a 1-2 year type of contract that can come in and hit 20 plus home runs for you, it seems like. Like Jose Abreu might have been the last one to have that mega type of contract with the Houston Astros.
Well,
And
Christian Walker, he was right
oh,
after.
that's right. And then Walker follows up. So only the Houston Astros are the ones that are spending that type of level of cash. But even like Paul Goldschmidt, I think, just signed a 1 year contract with the New York, with the Yankees. Like I mentioned Josh Naylor because I don't think Naylor's going to sign like a 5 year, $25 million a season type of contract. He may fit in with what the White Sox are comfortable spending. But on the pitching front, we talk about this every offseason too, Jim. Pitching is so damn expensive. Hey, this guy was a reliable starting pitcher, but he had his Tommy John surgery. Well, he commands $14 million a season. Like the White Sox haven't spent that type of cash on a pitcher since what, Lance Lynn, when they re-signed him. So it would kind of go against the flow of what they have recently done. So while I don't think the White Sox realistically are going to spend a lot of money on the pitching side, even though you could logically make the case to do so, there are some markets that I think they should be a lot more active this offseason. If they duplicated what they did in 24 and 25 in the offseason, I'd be pretty disappointed. And I think that could be detrimental in stopping the momentum that this young squad has been building up for you since the All-Star break. I do wonder if the next time you get a chance to chat with Chris Getz, James, and I know that you have a lot of questions for him already, but I do wonder what he makes of what the White Sox have done since the All-Star break.
I feel like that's the subtext of every Chris Getz chat of what he thinks of the team.
Well, yes, but specifically this run, does it change the rebuild timeline?
Was it 10 and
Like
seven
we're
in 17
he
games?
never he's never acknowledged the rebuild timeline. Why would he start giving like updates from like the quarter poll? We've asked him when they've expected contention fast, and he's like refused to put a date on it. Like, why would he now admit to like, oh yes, it's changed, just to like become a
Is he
bit,
just
where he's just like,
afraid
it's
of.
moved again, but I won't tell you where. Like,
Okay. Is he afraid to repeat the same mistakes that his predecessor did?
well, shouldn't someone be? I think in general, I'd be very surprised if they like invested big enough first baseman in free agency with like an extensive injury history. Like everything they've been doing with drafting and roster development has not been like, let's spend money on first base. I feel like that might be some principle they like go down with, like leave it open in some contending year in a way that people are ticked off at because they might be that committed to that principle. I don't think they've ever pinned it on just like a certain year. And I also don't know, like, I don't think it's changed in some like drastic manner over the course of 2 weeks. Like, the bulk of your prospect lists, or at least the top of like your list, like, is going to graduate this season or next. So, like, that's already kind of dictating like when the core you've built, like, at least needs to be supplemented away or make decisions on them. I don't think that, like, that change that was true going into this year, pretty much like who was expected to debut, and I don't think it's been altered by like Colson Montgomery hitting a lot of home runs in the last month. It's certainly encouraging. It provides more good feelings. It certainly defines like what could the shape of his production be. Like, we're still kind of figuring out what Colson's going to do, let alone like how it affects the direction of the team over like a year-to-year basis. So I think it's encouraging. I don't think it's like changes the timeline in some way. It might provide some external media or public pressure to be like, hey, why don't you build on this thing? You should be active this offseason. You should show some sign that you're pushing it ahead,
And that's
even if
good.
like, even which is good, which could produce a better product. But I think it's going to be more like if they could convince you that if they could just lie to you and you believe it, that they signed like a bunch of relievers and made like a bunch of like free agents that made it feel like they were serious and not did it, like the basic core of this team could just improve by 10 games next year, and you'd be like, all right, they took an adequate step. And like I feel like the free agency, especially at this level of spending, is often like for the display, as much as like there's a reasonable expectation of impact, like they should sign like a couple seventh, eighth inning guys to lengthen out the bullpen, maybe one eighth inning, one seventh, and they can like add a couple major league deals like in the rotation and feel like, all right, this team should be halfway decent, but like it's not going to be like franchise altering type of stuff, I don't feel like. And I feel like the ship is bigger than just like they won a bunch of games in 2 weeks.
I get where you're coming from, but that I view that point of view, James, as not being realistic of what's going to go down in 2027. I
Like,
think you'd be setting yourself up to get royally screwed over in
what are you talking about?
2027 with the CBA
Oh,
expiring.
okay.
The season's not going to start on time. Like, that would be my working assumption for every MLB front office.
So, like,
They
the
know
idea
what's
they
going
need to like
down.
make it a massive amount of revenue next season.
No, I'm saying that. Again, Josh Naylor, someone like him, not going to require a lot of years, not going to require a lot of money. I like your ideas of maybe don't spend closer money, but get guys that you can count on that have quality stuff that can handle mid to high leverage situations. Go after the injured starting pitchers again, or the guys that are fringy, that are number five type of starters. You've been very successful in that regard. I just think that they should be more active in trying to look for upgrades than the previous two off seasons, where they're just trying to fill out the roster.
How does that affect what situation there are when the lockout happens?
Well, because right now you have all these guys on rookie contracts, and that would be, I'm assuming, for a lot of them, their last year on their rookie contract in 2027. So you have this wonderful window that you can spend some serious money on free agents while the payroll is pretty limited, or someone on the lower side, because a lot of your players on the 26-man roster are still pretty cheap before they hit arbitration. And there does come to that escalation point, like we saw in 2021 and 2022, where the White Sox were carrying a payroll above $180 million. So
I
if you
can't
are
imagine
worried
they'd
about money,
accrue service time while they're locked out. They're frozen in that pre-arb
so then
contract.
28 would be still a rookie year deal for like a
Yeah,
Colson
or pre-arb,
Montgomery.
yeah.
Okay. So then the arbitration escalations that we should be expecting, because again, they have a lot of rookies right now, especially in their lineup. They've been posting every day post All-Star break. Then you enter the Justin Ishbia years, 29 through 31, 32.
Potentially, like if we're not all like in refugee camps by then, like I don't know, man, like that's far off.
But it's not really far off, though. Like, this is the whole point of what Chris Getz is trying to build. I mean, you can't go, well, we're going to take this year to year, and then we're going to make up our mind in the offseason, depending on how we feel of what we're seeing from the team. Like, if you're going to build, build.
If the scale of this like situation is like, can we pay for Colson Montgomery's arb years? Then yes, it's totally a bigger calculation than they got hot for 2 weeks. The rebuild's like on a ch new timeline now.
One note is that during the strike, the players did earn service time. They did have service time granted to them. Alex
Okay.
Fernandez became a free agent in 1995 because, and by surprise, because players were granted service time. So,
Did that happen in a lockout? Like, did it happen in like that? I didn't know if like that was an agreement that came through afterwards,
yeah,
or
I
was
mean,
it
there
like
isn't a whole lot of precedent, you know, thankfully with Major League Baseball work stoppages, but you know, there has been a case where in the previous one where the players did strike and they were theoretically quote unquote responsible for the stoppage, they were still granted service time afterwards. So I wouldn't assume either way, I guess, when it comes to what players may or may not get.
got it. I just hate for them to have a very quiet offseason again because they're still in wait and see mode. April, May, and June next year. Oh, wow. We are a lot better than we were expecting. We don't have the farm system to make a big deal at the trade deadline. So keep it up, boys. I promise you, next offseason. And then we have the flurry of moves November 30th and December 1st that everyone is trying to get deals in before the CBA expires. And maybe the White Sox are active. Then again, when that happened, we were talking about a Leury Garcia 3-year contract extension. before the CBA had expired. I just
Well,
think the White Sox could be more
they
active.
should be like active. Like, do you want them to be like a contender or not? Because I feel like that's the major point of delineation.
I think
And
that
if
just there's certain, like on the pitching front, I can understand if Jerry's like, we don't have a lot of money, so you're going to have to be strategic on how you spend this type of cash. And pitching is expensive. So I can kind of see where they're still mid-tier on the pitching front. But to Jim's point, if you're in January and nobody's touching what Kyle Tucker is asking for, why not? I mean, as teams have proven, and as Jim has
I assume
proven
for the
many
same reasons they
times,
haven't done those sorts of things for the last like 20 years.
yeah, and I get it because a lot of that is on Jerry Reinsdorf. But again, then I will mention, Jerry, you're going to be 90 in February. You want
Yeah.
one more shot at glory?
You want to spend
Like, you
your
got to start
golden
taking
years
it.
getting updates on Kyle Tucker's calf like in July?
Yes. Yes. Oh, all right. Well, I disagree with James, and we'll see what the White Sox do. Probably be a repeat of 2025, and it'll be the Monopoly guy pulling his pockets and nothing's in there. I still think the White Sox should be a lot more active this offseason. Another positive for the White Sox, Lenín Sosa. He wins the race to hitting 20 home runs first for the White Sox. Doesn't necessarily mean he's going to win the home run title for the White Sox, but he's first to 20. He hit his 20th home run on Sunday. Lenín had a big day, as I mentioned in the intro. He hit not only his 20th home run, but the go-ahead single as well to get the White Sox to win on Sunday. He was cold before Sunday. Sosa was 2 for 21 in the month of September so far. Jim, are you surprised that it's Lenín Sosa first to 20 home runs?
No, I think I'm more surprised by the size of the homers that he's been able to hit, like 450 plus feet reaching the second level of shrubbery at Comerica. Like,
That was a big one.
that's like, it's not lucky. He's been able to do it time and time again. And we talked about it in the game thread, just saying that, where does power come from? And James mentioned that, Lenín Sosa's bottom half is a lot bigger than it used to be. And it
He
brought
knows
to mind.
spots.
Yeah, well, like it brought to mind like him and Garrett Crochet are the two guys I saw in the minor leagues. Crochet in a rehab stint where I saw him and my thought was, were their butts always that big? Like, just am I, is this something where I don't it doesn't show up on MILB.TV or MLB.com? Just the game cast that you see in person, like there's a shelf there that wasn't there before. And no, it's like it. That was one reason why, like, when Sosa had that breakout year in the minors, like, it stood out because, like, oh, this is not a guy hitting with his hands. This is a guy getting some torque, putting his pants into it, as my dad would say. And, like, yeah, now he just has a better of an idea of how to do that. Probably getting, maybe even getting stronger still to where he's able to do that. So, yeah, it's not surprising, that he got to 20. And it does make him, in terms of like infielders to figure out and where to give him a space to play, it's like he's probably the biggest question just in terms of how much the White Sox buy into him, whether they think he can get even better offensively, and then do they like him enough at first to give him that playing time, or is he just going to kind of bounce between spots because like he's learning just very, very slowly.
According to the Fielding Bible, which we are getting to that time of year because we're going to be in award season in October and November, and the Fielding Bible is used to help determine Gold Glove winners. When you look at defensive runs saved at second base for Lenín Sosa, -9. He's one of the worst fielding second basemen in Major League Baseball. First base, shockingly, +2. So maybe I'm wrong. Not Josh Naylor. It's Lenín Sosa. Jim's dream. Lenín Sosa is the White Sox
Now that
first
he's standing on the
baseman.
base with regularity, my fears are somewhat calmed. But yeah, there's a big divide with Sosa's defense at second base between DRS and outs above average. And I think video scouting for Sosa does make a difference versus just a system measuring player movement, because the mistakes that he make, I think, are not movement based or not range necessarily or arm strength, et cetera. Just why did you do what you did? And I
Yeah.
think that's what I think DRS better captures.
He has the ability to make very impressive plays at second base. It's just not consistent. And he's not consistently making what should be the consistent play. So when we're thinking about roster construction and you're thinking about this offseason 2026, I still think you're probably leaning towards Chase Mydroth right now. If you didn't add anyone, you're probably leaning towards Chase Mydroth being taking up most of the playing time at second base because he is more consistent defensively at that position. And now with Colson Montgomery, who actually leads the White Sox, according to the Fielding Bible, in DRS, despite the limited amount of games he's played, he's already at +7 at the shortstop position, which is really impressive to go along with his power. So everything's working great in the White Sox way. Just need Colson to better contact, better on base ability, and then he'll be a more complete player. But this is very impressive his rookie year. But with roster construction, if you didn't add anyone, it's probably what, Jim? Sosa at first, Mydroth at second, Montgomery at short, and then Vargas at third, moving Miguel back over to the other corner.
Seems like it. Then you have Curtis Meade probably rounding it out among incumbents.
Is
Ryan
that
Ramos still existing?
is Ramos coming up with out of options in
Yep.
2026? Oh, man. Man, I kind of feel bad for him because I think he's kind of left out. But then again, I thought Lenin Sosa would have been left out this spring training, and the White Sox ended up holding on to him, and that move has really paid off with 20 home runs. I figured, I guess with Lenin Sosa, James, offensively he's proven himself. In 2026, he's got a spot on the roster, right? It's Dan Johnson, right? He's on the team for next year.
Dan Johnson famously was not on the team for next year.
Ha.
So that's kind of the exception that proves the rule, or the reverse. I don't know. I think he's definitely, I think all the auto options guys, you kind of have to figure out how and where they fit. And maybe he's the one whose bat makes him a little bit easier to market at this stage. Just saying. Like, I don't think like they can hold on to all of their, this foursome of kind of like corner guys who aren't quite fully established as like plus bats yet. So I think something's got to give in that respect. And in terms of like where they could be aggressive without necessarily having money, they could, move pieces around. I don't think you're necessarily getting like established or future. I don't know if you're getting 50 FV for a Lenin Sosa front-end package at this point in time, but maybe you get another similarly blocked player in a different position.
Feels like the reverse of like Dominic Fletcher for Christian Mana, except on the different on the other side.
Right. Maybe you can just get Christian Mana back. Miss him. So yeah, I think in terms of like he's no longer someone who we expect like when's the day that he finally hits the waiver wire and he's gone for good, which I thought was always how it was going to end with Lenin, with the way he got, yanked around in his opening years. I think if he leaves, he leaves like with his head held high because he's returned an asset or, been delivered to some team that is wants him and is going to give him a role. So I don't think he's going to leave or not going to be on the team for the reasons that like was threatening him this entire year or threatening him his entire career up to this point. But I don't think it's necessarily given just because like there's going to be such a forming logjam and they probably want that team to be more optionable than they were and certainly are right now, not less by holding like all four of those guys. So certainly like yeah, Ramos looks like the obvious odd man out because he's the one playing the least and seemingly the least deserving of playing time at this point. But I think weird things could happen when you kind of have to clear out a logjam and for the most advantageous way. To Jim's point about the home runs, I thought it was funny post game that Ozzie was asking Lenin if he ever thought this was possible for him to hit 20 home runs in a season. And I've asked him some version of this question as well with the same idea of like, did you really ever think you were going to get this opportunity? But Lenin took it as like, well, I hit 25 in 2022, like got power. I don't know what the big deal is type of answer, which amuses me. Lenin's frequently like, I don't know what everyone's making a big deal type of responses are, which is great to see the full swing for both like his offensive exploits and like why people are like gently asking him, so what were you thinking out there? And him being like, oh, I just thought this and did that. And like, having a good year. enjoying it.
Everybody should want to be him.
Yes. He's at peace.
Well, someone that I'm not sure if they're going to be on the 2026 roster for the White Sox, but they had themselves a day on Sunday. Will Robertson. Will Robertson had a big hit for the White Sox to drive in a run to tie the game, and he made two sensational defensive catches. And, Jim, one of the best home run robberies I've seen in a while. He got air robbing a home run in left field against Detroit. It's all over the highlight reels and all over social media. Is Will Robertson the leader in the clubhouse right now for best defensive play by a White Sox player in 2025, Jim?
I think so, in terms of like how photogenic the play was. For so many years on MLB TV, like commercial breaks, the Mike Trout leaping catch in front of the Southwest sign at Camden Yards, just seeing that over and over again in slow motion. Like, yeah, he's maxing out his height, reaching over the wall as far as he can to bring back a homer, and it's the best player in the game doing it. And yeah, it makes for very good marketing. And I'm going to go on a limb here and say Will Robertson is not Mike Trout in terms of marketing. Very nice, as far as my interactions with him, very nice, pleasant fellow. I wish him well, and it's cool to see him get some highlights. But everything else about it, in terms of just how much ground he had to cover, how he didn't have any missteps along the way, like given how long he had to go and how he could have been fooled. And then just timing his leap very well, getting full extension, not getting stuck on the wall. Like, yeah, it needed everything to go right. I think like Luis Robert Jr. has probably made more physically demanding catches in terms of closing speed, how much ground he had to cover right away to get to a spot. Maybe he didn't have to like lay out jump as high to make the catch that Robertson made, but I can't imagine Will Robertson making some of the catches that Roberts made. But in terms of it all coming together and being like a replay, you'll see, circulating around MLB.com and the White Sox end of year highlights, and maybe in future years, like, yeah, it does stand out in that way.
Well, let us know in the comments section if there are other nominees that you would have for best defensive play by the White Sox. Luis Robert's got a few of them, to your point, Jim.
Yeah, it does make me wish that there was a way to just replicate plays to like play horse for outfielders. Like, see if anybody else can do it. Like, I'd like to see Andrew Benintendi try. I'd like to see like, Gavin Sheets try in previous years. Like, Mike Talkman's just legs falling off as he's trying to do it. Like, just losing parts as he's trying to close the distance. It would be fun.
Not even, for them.
Well, so even Robert, very painful. I mean, like, but like even like Robert might struggle just because like if he's had a weakness, he's, it's getting that last step in front of the wall and timing the leap. Like, that's been when he's been disappointing as an outfielder, is like, oh, he could have made that catch. Like, it would have been a sensational catch, and you can't count on him having made it, but he probably feels he should have made it, and he's improved his skills over that time. He used to be terrible at the wall, and now he's okay at it, but there are still some moments where, he probably just needed one more half step to launch, and he's not quite able to do it. So even like he might be challenged by the way that play came together. So yeah, I wish there were ways to just replicate that, like have the hitting version of Traject just launch the same fly ball over and over again and see what happens.
Well, it's been a great run for the White Sox, and they look to continue it at home as they have a little bit of a break on this road trip. They have three games at home Tuesday through Thursday against the Tampa Bay Rays before going back on the road to face the Cleveland Guardians this next weekend. The Tampa Bay Rays, they're 71-72 on the season. They're fourth place in the American League East. They're 11 games back in the division. They're four games back of the wild card, so it's pretty bleak for their chances of making the postseason. They've lost their last three games. They are 7-3 in their last 10, however. On the road, they are 33-36. The White Sox do have the season series lead. They won 2 out of 3 in Tampa earlier this season, shortly after the All-Star break, right after the Pittsburgh series. Your pitching probables for this series, Thursday and Wednesday night, these are at 6:40 p.m. Central Time starts. The Rays are to be determined for each of these games, so it's kind of hard to understand and who the Rays are going to be throwing against the White Sox. But for the White Sox, Yoenis Gomez will take the ball on Tuesday. It's to be determined on Wednesday for the White Sox, but getaway day on Thursday, September 11th. This is a 1:10 p.m. Central Time start. Shane Smith will take the ball for the White Sox and hopefully continue his very strong run in his past 8 starts. So looking at Wednesday, James, should we expect a bullpen day for the White Sox? They've been tossing Frazier Ellard for the first inning and then piecing it together afterwards.
They could. Burke would be lined up for it, and he was all right in his last start, so they could open for him if they wanted. I feel like a bulk arm rather than, even though they are getting this off day, it was a grueling stretch of the bullpen with like 17 games in 17 days. I'd imagine that's the move rather than just straight penning it. They've ridden Tyler Alexander pretty hard, so I think some sort of like multi inning call up would be in order. DeVitt just pitched Sunday, so I don't think he'd be in line and not great. So and Cannon just got sent down after not looking great. So I'm gonna guess opener for Burke.
Okay, is Cannon done for the season with the White Sox? Will he spend the rest of the year in Charlotte? Any insight on that?
No, I've not gotten that sort of pronunciation. Like.
Okay.
In the wake of his bad outing, that he should never come back or something.
He could, just in terms of, I mean, like he has, you know, he theoretically has to spend 15 days down in Charlotte, and that might determine things. But also, like if somebody gets injured, he can be called up before then, so they can game it fairly easily.
Got it. Well, we'll see what the White Sox do on Wednesday against the Rays. Again, Smith has been excellent for the White Sox. Yoenis Gomez has been a pleasant surprise. For the type of production that he's been able to provide to the White Sox. Hopefully they get 4-5 innings from him on Tuesday, and hopefully the White Sox continue these good vibes against the Rays and continue their winning ways. Who is hot for the White Sox offense coming to this series against Tampa Bay? Chase Mydroth, again, is getting a little bit of a hot streak in the last 7 games. He's got a .455 batting average. He's 10 for his last 22. Despite what he said to James Fegan, Andrew Benintendi, on a little bit of a hot streak. He's 8 for 21 with 3 homers and 9 RBIs in his last 7 games. Colson Montgomery's got 3 homers and 8 RBIs in his last 7 with an OPS over 1,000, slugging percentage over 600. And this is the Curtis Meade revenge series, Jim. Curtis, 9 for 29 in the last 7 games, batting .310. It's not a lot of power, but I think he's finally, it just seems like everything we heard from Tampa Bay, he was always a player in flux of how he wants to stand in the box, how he wants to swing with the bat. And it looks like with this extended playing time that he's finally finding his rhythm.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like he's got the, bat to ball skills that allow him to stay afloat. Like he doesn't swing and miss terribly often. Seems like he knows what he's doing. It's just a swing where like it does look like a double swing more than somebody who's going to all of a sudden develop some serious power as he goes along. Like Kyle Teal, for example, like he had a lot of doubles early on, not homers, but you could see like as he gained confidence like that, the pull power like showed up and the A swing, you know, he's getting it off with more regularity. And when he gets a hold of one, he gets a hold of one. I think with Meade, haven't quite seen, or I've seen some A swings, but it doesn't seem like it's necessarily something that like really generates, you know, the kind of lift or puller power. It does seem like more like making outfielders chase in the gap. And then like if he's in the right ballpark or, is out in front of a breaking ball enough that he gets that lift that he needs to get over the fence. So I think that's why he's like an interesting guy to have around as like a second base option, like with Mydroth not having a lot of power. That's some thing that he doesn't have to stand out with. But yeah, if you're talking about corners and first base and third base and Sosa and Vargas, like I'm curious how he slots in there. Like on the other side, like Adrian Hauser seems like he should pitch against the White Sox at some point this series. And you're looking at his splits now, like he has about a 200 points lefty righty divide with the splits. So that could be a case where if the White Sox offense having more lefties is exposing these pitchers who can get by like handling righties, then perhaps it's a revenge series against Hauser, or like we'll find out how much they hated him as a teammate. No, it seemed like he was well respected and everything like that, but it could be a case where they do perhaps make it look like they got out in time just because they have more lefties to handle them.
I haven't been following closely. How has Adrian Hauser been for the Rays?
I think fine, like disappointing if you're looking for him to replicate what he did with the White Sox, but delivering innings, I think, for a team, that needed them.
to 4.91 ERA.
Okay, well, not great. Not but Eric Fetty bad.
The Rays would probably counter that they traded three players who were roster crunch, soon to be victims anyway.
Got it. Well, at least the White Sox are getting something out of it. They got a lot out of Adrian Hauser this season. Curtis Meade, we'll see if that continues.
He's thrown at least 5 innings in 5 of his 6 starts. So, like, he's serving a purpose in one regard, but he's not, his ERA is now up to 3. So,
got it. Well, we'll face old friend Adrian Hauser. The White Sox will face old friend Adrian Hauser this week. We'll recap what happens against the Rays series and see if the White Sox can continue this hot streak on Thursday night in our next podcast episode. And then finally, as we do on the Monday shows, we take a look around Major League Baseball. This is an opportunity for me to shout out to those. Congratulations in the Sox Machine Fantasy Baseball League, our 32-team league. The Southside Stand Up, Drake LaRoche's Leadership Foundation, the Stone Ponies, Bud Black Metal, Big Herdin, Garbage Pride, the Weissachen, that's Chris, who's the co-commissioner, who's done an excellent job this year, and the Springfield Isotopes. All 8 of those teams have made it to the semifinals. So can't wait to see who makes it into the championship round in the 32-team Crazy Sox Machine Fantasy Baseball League. But congratulations to those teams. And thank you guys so much for playing all season long. And Chris, thank you for being an awesome commissioner and customizing these playoffs during the season. For me, around Major League Baseball, we got some races now, Jim, in the American League. Like, to your point, you've been kind of hinting at this for a month. The wild card races, especially the National League, over. The Mets have a pretty healthy lead despite losing that series against the Cincinnati Reds. But the Yankees and Red Sox are within striking distance of the Toronto Blue Jays in the American League East. I don't know if anybody really wants to be the sixth seed, but now we have to talk about Kansas City and Texas being serious of making the postseason because Seattle is being Seattle. So the American League got a lot more interesting when it comes to the playoff race. How about you, Jim? What's catching your attention around Major League Baseball?
Yeah, the Mariners, 524 winning percentage, so they're not reaching. Was it 54% was the goal for Jerry DePoto? Like, even under those standards, still disappointing, and it's hard to figure them out. But the thing that's been continually popping up on anything I look at that involves an algorithm is that Phillies Marlins home run fiasco in left field with the Karen, which I always feel bad about saying because I have friends named Karen and they're not like that, and I just feel like I'm just making their lives harder by doing that. But it's what's been, it's how the incident's been identified, so at least I'll say it once. But I feel like home run politics in the stands are a lot more complicated than they used to be, especially in the advent of MLB.com or MLB cameras following them around, MLB highlights being widely disseminated and clipped, and then, being able to try to track people where they supposedly work and trying to identify them by name makes me not want to catch a homer or not be involved with any homer that comes. Because if I caught, I've never caught one, and when I was a kid, like, I didn't expect people to give foul balls or home runs to me. So, like, I've never, even as a kid, never got one. But, like, having a kid at home, I would think, like, I'll just keep it and bring it home for my son. Like, and tell him, hey, I got you a baseball. But there's no way to express that on a, being a fan in a stand on a broadcast. Like, you're automatically treated as an awful person. Yeah, obviously, I would not knock anybody down. I would not rip a ball out of a kid's hand. I would not go and harass a father for. So, I mean, like, this is a case where it's just going layer after layer. But, like, it's, seeing, like, everybody making fun of her, sure, it was a contemptible behavior at a ballpark, but, like, trying to get her fired, everything like that, just, like, ugh, like, just strikes me as, like, can't everybody just make fun of her and then, like, leave it alone? And
no,
just, there has to be, like, retribution, which is just I hope I never catch a home run, or if I do, like, it's that guy at Target Field, the one person in the upper deck, just like, yeah, I'll saunter over to it. There's nobody to give it to. I win by default.
just leave it. Just let the cleaning crew, they can have that baseball, whatever. James, how about you? What's catching your attention around Major League Baseball?
I'm in favor of team spending. It's great. Players should make all the money possible. I do think in the off season we get a little trapped into teams demonstrating that they are spending and making big free agent investments and just kind of declaring like these are the serious teams and no one else is serious. That said, the Dodgers, who ruined baseball during this winter with all their spending, do not have 80 wins in September. I'm looking at their pitching staff, not counting Dustin May because they dumped him because he was bad. Clayton Kershaw is second on that team in innings. Someone named Jack Dreyer, who I've recently been told is not the guy who played Kenneth LePage on 30 Rock, is like third on their team in F4 for pitching. Tanner Scott, Roky Sasaki, Kirby Yates, all ERAs over four. Roky's, obviously looking terrible in rehab, and who knows when he comes back. Like, I feel like we develop a lot of these kind of narratives in our echo chamber during the off season because it's all we have to do is kind of like ping back forth with each other and like what do you think it's going to impact, and then the games start, we got to forget all the things he said. But that team is like not good or not great and not looking like playoff worthy, and obviously just the playoff worthy, but like not the dominant like feature that they've been for like 15 years, and they just lost a game where they had a no hitter with
Yeah.
one out way. A lot of times, like I think free agency, like yeah, it's filling big needs, and I think as much of the time it's communicating like seriousness to the fan base and investment, which are important things that certainly this team that we follow could afford to spend in. But I don't think it kind of dictates who wins championships quite as like much as it gets made out to be all the time. And maybe if all our coverage wasn't just zero locked in on transactions constantly, we'd understand the sport better than we do, but probably not. So we'll talk to you some other time.
Chucky Robinson's on the roster.
Chucky Robinson's on the roster.
Like,
You realize Lou Trevino threw 26 innings with the Dodgers this year? I didn't know that.
it's Chucky Robinson. Like, he just seems like one of those guys who's classic second division player. But yeah, Smith got hurt, like, but Dalton Rushing got hurt. Like, they've all of a sudden, like, Corey Lee would be like an upgrade for him. I think like that's where they're at
Too
behind the
late.
plate. Yeah, when yeah,
I
right.
was like so thrilled that they like signed, like traded for Alex Call. I was like, man, Alex Call is gonna be like on national broadcasts of playoff teams. Like this is awesome. And then I had a second, like the Dodgers' big move was Alex Call. Great for Alex. Are they okay?
Well, they have a game lead over the San Diego Padres. So I still think they're going to make the playoffs, but they might lose the division to the Padres and then have to go through Wrigley Field to face the Chicago Cubs. It really feels like if Milwaukee doesn't win the National League pennant, that's going to be pretty disappointing for the Brewers.
I feel like what's more disturbing is that there's like a good chance of like Andrew Vaughn or Gavin Sheets like launching some hit, big hit that like takes down the Dodgers and or ends their season or something absurd like that. The mind reels.
Like Connor Gillespie when he was the Giants postseason hero.
Yeah. What a series he had. What a series. Yeah. It's hard to repeat though. Like defending the Dodgers a little bit. It's hard to repeat. It's hard to get back to the World Series in back-to-back years. We haven't seen that since Kansas City did it, what, 10 years ago, when they lost to the Giants and they won the next year against the Mets. We haven't had a back-to-back World Series champion since the late 90s, early 2000s with the Yankees. It's tough to do. So I
It certainly
understand.
seems like Michael Kopech certainly seemed like he emptied the clip to get them to the World Series last year in terms of what he's been dealing with this season.
Well, it'll be a big week again. The races are getting tighter in the American League. We'll see what happens in the National League West, but it does feel like some of the top teams in the National League are getting banged up or they're starting to move backwards. The National League postseason will be going through Milwaukee, Wisconsin, as the Brewers have a pretty commanding lead when it comes to home field advantage and the number one seed while the Blue Jays and Tigers are still battling each other to have home field supremacy, but the Blue Jays still have to hold off the Yankees and Red Sox in the American League East. So very fun stuff around Major League Baseball. And yeah, White Sox keep winning. Keep the good vibes going. And that will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you just discovered the Sox Machine Podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You can also listen and watch the show on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SoxMachine. Follow us on social media. We're on all the social media outlets. At Sox Machine, you can follow James at J.R. Fegan. He'll be back in the stadium this week in the clubhouse talking to the White Sox coaches and players again. And you can follow me at SoxMachine_Josh. We're on Instagram. We're on Blue Sky at SoxMachine.com. If you enjoy our work and want all of our coverage of the Chicago White Sox and Major League Baseball, you can get it at SoxMachine.com. A Sox Machine subscription starts at $5 a month. They get to the ad-free version of both the podcast and the website and access to our comment section. We have additional tiers that provide additional benefits to you, including our Veterans Committee, which our VCs get to be in our group chat, and we get to have monthly Zoom calls with them, sharing them what we are thinking about as far as the site and what's to come, especially with this off-season. So if that's of interest to you, you can inquire at SoxMachine.com. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com. You're on for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Alongside Jim Margulis and James Fegan, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.